You are listening to Processing Trauma Out Loud, conversations about trauma and healing from two women who are doing the work.
Hey everyone, it's Candace and Cher with Processing Trauma Out Loud. Cher, you and I have been in a series of episodes about why we think story work is the bomb. We love story work. We continue to do story work, and we just love the outcomes that we see, not only for ourselves, but for other people who we know have just seen a lot of healing through story work. What we want to talk about today is a theme that often emerges as we're listening to someone's story. This isn't in everyone's story, but I'm going to say it is in quite a few stories. What we're going to talk about today is triangulation. And I want to be very slow and gentle in setting this topic up by saying this. Triangulation can occur unintentionally, and it can also occur intentionally. And so as we go back and forth today on this topic, I really want to invite our listeners to just come curious. And if they feel that there's something that resonates with them in this, be kind to yourself, be kind to the other person, and yet don't be afraid to name the truth of if triangulation is in your story. Now, I say don't be afraid to name it. At some level, we're usually afraid to name the harm. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that?
I love that setup. And I want to also offer a little caution in the sense of, as parents listening, it might be very easy to go toward how you have triangulated your children. And while this is good and important to see, most of our emphasis is really talking about how were you triangulated as a child. And if you were triangulated as a child, very likely you have experienced doing some triangulating with your children. And this is where the unintentionality can really be important to recognize, that it may have caused rupture and you can move toward repair. And we love that. We encourage that. We don't want our listeners to go into shame if they recognize that they have triangulated their children. We invite you to recognize that and be curious about it. Also really invite you toward, where did triangulation show up in your life in your developmental years?
There's something I've seen quite a bit over the last few years, and it's this statement: once we know better, we can do better. That is true, but it can come across as a harshness. You just need to know better so you can do better. And here's what we want to say. Once you understand and see the pattern, you can begin to move out of it, almost always with the help of somebody else, with the process of grief, really. Grief if you were triangulated as a child, and some grief that you may have done that to your child. And we want to say we are a very safe, loving, accepting place on this podcast to name triangulation.
Yeah. I don't know a person who talks about the honesty of their childhood, even people who would say that their harm did not feel significant, you know, or extreme, but where there wasn't some level of triangulation. And so it's common, and yet it's a big deal, and it is a theme, and that's why we're talking about it. Yeah, let's dive in, Candace, and give a little bit of explanation and definition of what are we talking about here?
We came up with just three things that we want to look at briefly today. We are not going to go into the weeds of triangulation, but we want to look at what is triangulation, what are the effects, and how can we heal from triangulation?
We're talking about complex childhood trauma, so we're mostly talking about families. But so when a parent pulls their child, and this can be at age 3, age 10, age 15, whatever, Even age 25, I will say, when the parent pulls the child into a relationship as a peer that is developmentally inappropriate, this is triangulation. The adult needs another adult to be their confidant, or to be the person who they process their sadness with, or the person who they try to bounce ideas off of to resolve problems. Not your 3-year-old, not your 7-year-old, not your 13-year-old, particularly if there is conflict between the adults. to bring a child in between that dynamic so that the child is closer to one of the parents who then vents their frustrations about the other adult to the child. This is a triangulation that just becomes so very harmful.
And here's what we know. No child wants to be in the middle. No child wants that put on them that they play a role in this other relationship. The parent that is looking to the child, right? There's going to be a sense for that child that their role is to side with the parent that's coming to them, which makes the other parent the enemy. No child wants that.
And I will say that it might look like the child does want it. When a parent does that, when a parent triangulates their child, they place that child in a position of power. And it might be power over the other adult. It might be power over siblings. And this is a place that is very difficult for a child. This is a part of then what brings trauma. Sometimes it can bring retaliation. Without a doubt, it brings envy or curses against the child. But the child may feel a sense of being esteemed. The child may even hear the parent say things like, "You're the only one I can talk to. You're the only one who understands me." And I feel emotional because I heard that a lot. When the child hears that, they feel loved. They feel honored and esteemed. And so part of them wants to be in that role and wants to be the chosen one and wants to be the one who hears the secrets, right? So it looks to the parent like the child wants it. But in truth, triangulation is bringing harm to the developmental process of what would be healthy for that child.
I like that you named the truth of that the child, there is a part of the child that wants it because they feel special. And yet, so let me say, no child needs that.
And deep down inside, what you said is a true statement though, Candace. Deep down inside, a child does not want it.
Yeah.
They don't. They want to be a kid. They want to be carefree and innocent and not bear the weight of adult-sized burdens when developmentally, they're not able to contain that. And also when they have no voice, no choice, no power, even to say, "Hey, stop. I don't want to be here. I don't want to hear this." A 5-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 10-year-old, even a junior higher typically would not have the ability to say stop.
Can we circle back around to when you got teared up just for a minute? And is that okay?
Yeah. I mean, because I'm feeling a lot of energy here. I'm going into a little bit higher arousal, not hyper arousal, but
we're in your story, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Is there any more you want to say about that?
Well, I'll just say, so as an example, because I think for our listeners, this can be really helpful. So my dad owned his own trucking business. We lived in a small town. He serviced local businesses and farmers. And so one of the things that was a privilege was getting to ride with dad. And I loved to ride with dad. Sometimes it would be hours that we would be together going, picking up something or whatever it was that needed to be hauled. And as we would travel the country roads or the highways, he would often talk to me about my mom, his wife, and I would hear all the things. And he would say to me things like, "You're the only one who understands me." And so I felt a sense of connection with him. I felt honored. I felt chosen. That, as well as probably a whole host of other things, caused my mother to turn against me with envy, like tremendous amount of envy. An envy that is evil, an envy that sets forth, knowing consciously or subconsciously, I'm not going to say I don't know, but an envy that set forth to do me harm because my mother did not like me being in that place. I shouldn't have been in that place. I just will say it's not okay that her envy was turned against me. It brought more harm to my life, but being triangulated set me up for that. And so it just was, brought a lot of harm.
So I'm wondering, when we're thinking about if we were triangulated, And do we have any experience that there was a sense that a parent didn't like us? Okay, that can be some data. We can't do much right now except talk about this, right? The other thing is quickly is, do you have a child that you feel envious or jealous towards because they have a closer relationship with someone else? We're getting into the waters of triangulation. I want to shift because I do want to invite our listeners to reach out if they have more questions or need help through this. I want to turn it a little bit of naming that the effects of triangulation for a child is that they lose all sense of autonomy. They are not able to set boundaries. Now, the older they get, they can begin to say, Mom, Dad, I don't want to hear about that. Unfortunately, that can come with a high price for them. But for little children, they can do nothing. And so what they learn is, I don't get to decide. I can't set boundaries. Now, a young child isn't going to say, I can't set boundaries. But this is what's happening. We're creating a pattern in their lives. What else do you see as an effect? Or do you want to say more about how being triangulated sets you up to not being able to set boundaries later in life?
Yeah, I think it's such an important thing because this issue of not being able to set boundaries, which comes from the sense of I have no voice. My voice doesn't matter. Nobody is listening. Even when I try to speak, I'm disregarded or dismissed or mocked or ridiculed, like all the things. For a child to learn that their voice doesn't matter, that thing alone affects every aspect of their life going forward. It affects their relationships with their peers when they begin dating. It affects their dating relationships. It affects, you named it earlier, autonomy. That sense that I am a separate being and I have an element of control over who gets access to me and who doesn't get access to me. Mm-hmm. So I think boundaries is really a very significant aspect. And we named envy is that element of envy is also, I think, a huge aspect that brings harm.
Cher, you and I both have our own stories. And, you know, as we worked with our story work coaches, we saw patterns and themes emerge.
Yeah.
And we also have seen it in the people that we work with. And there is this sense, oh, you can come in thinking, I'm always choosing this person. I'm always drawn to this person. It can be hard to name, not saying that people aren't at fault for anything, but oftentimes it's like, oh no, I have control in this. I have agency to say, why do I keep getting myself into these relationships instead of, you know, always blaming the other person? Now, the other person may have things to blame, but at what point do we say, my picker's off?
Well, and explain agency, because I think this is so important, Candace. Great, great that you brought that up.
Well, a sense of agency is that for a child, it's developmentally appropriate to begin to teach and show the child that they own their bodies, their thoughts, their hearts, their minds. Now they need guidance and they need help, but ultimately what they feel and what they think about what's happening to them or what they're experiencing matters. They are a separate being that does need connection.
Yeah.
So I want to say harm agency when a child grows up feeling like they have to be dependent on someone else for everything.
Right.
They have no sense of, oh, I have thoughts about this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't like it when someone touches my body there. I wonder how many people can relate to this.
I think an agency is, it's not only having the voice to say, I want this or I don't want this, but it's the confidence that I can actually move my body away or closer, whatever that agency is. It's like having the personal power to move toward or away from the thing that I want or don't want, rather than thinking that I can't, and it's up to that other person. If somebody else is moving in too close, I don't want to hurt them, or I don't want them to feel bad. Rather than being able to speak the truth, we allow someone to move toward us in ways that don't feel good, and we feel like there's nothing we can do.
Cher, this has been a great conversation. And I know I mentioned at the beginning that we were going to talk about how we heal from this.
Yeah.
I think I want to spend a whole episode on how we heal. And we will go ahead and close out today with just saying, we understand this is a hard topic.
Yeah.
And we hope you come back next week to hear how we heal.
Yeah. So good. Thank you, Candace. Really good to be with you.
Good to be with you today too, friend. Love you.
I love you too.
Thank you for listening to Processing Trauma Out Loud. Make sure to check out the show notes for links to suggested resources and social media. Like, subscribe, and follow to keep up with our weekly content. And if you don't mind, take a moment to rate and review us. Your feedback is extremely valuable and contributes to the success of this podcast. One last thing. If you have found this podcast helpful in any way, or if you have questions on how to take the next steps on your healing journey, please reach out to us via email at candaceshare@gmail.com. That's candaceshare@gmail.com. Our sound engineer is Jeremiah Jones of Auditstory LLC. We welcome you to join us for more conversations soon. Take care.